everyone, and welcome to Minute 82 of Season 3 of Movie Raw Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is John from the Dirty Harry Minute. Welcome back, J-Bam.
Thank you, Rob, for having me yet again for this great podcast you have. Thank you.
Well, I needed someone to be able to break down the components of a Twinkie, so I figured you would be the perfect person for that.
Considering they've only been in this country for about 10 years and mostly in discount stores, sure, I can bring a lot of information.
Well, I hope they haven't been sitting on the shelf for 10 years.
No, I hope not. But yeah, know these things well. Looking forward to talking about them.
Not really.
Go on.
So, Minute 82 begins with Ellis making himself comfortable and ends with Al talking about ice cream. Ooh. So, yesterday's minute was very Ellis-heavy. And, you know, we get to see Ellis for a few seconds in this minute. But we will continue with the snowball that Ellis has begun. We talked about yesterday the fact that Ellis pretty much had a lot of gall with the way that he was talking and referring to Hans and patting him on the shoulder, patting Carl on the shoulder and stuff like that. And then he sits down and makes himself comfortable in what looks like a very comfortable chair, I must say. You know, this is the type of chair that Holly has for whoever she's having meetings with. You know, the brown, it looks pretty comfortable.
Does his posture look comfortable?
No. He's at a very strange angle with the way that he sits down there.
And do you think Holly has had him in the office many times, had to endure him lying there on the couch on the seat many times?
I believe so, because based on what we saw from the first, I think, week, or maybe it was the second week, you know, when he's following her around, he is definitely harassing her. You know, nowadays, if we mentioned this back then, if he were to act now the way that he acts here, I think he would have been fired many, many months ago. Not a very smart way to act in the workplace.
Yeah, I'll say.
Yeah. So basically, the punch of everything that Ellis was saying yesterday only comes in the first few seconds of this minute, where he says, "I can give them to you." So Hans was waiting the whole time to find out what it is that Ellis is offering. And Ellis is offering to give him John, that poison pill. He sits down very confident, even though he doesn't look comfortable. It doesn't look like he's sitting in a comfortable pose. He's still very confident. He's smiling. He's chuckling. You know, he smiles, what I would say, he looks devilishly, the way that he smiles here.
Have you listened to him on headphones, the way his mouth sounds?
Yeah.
I had them turned up, and it's just, the arrogance of a man with a cocaine dry mouth. And
yes. Yeah. Yeah. And that's all we have for Ellis for now. We'll have to wait. He'll be back later in the week, maybe tomorrow. I think he's back. And then we get another outside shot of the Nakatomi Building. Mm-hmm. You know, you hear the sounds of sirens and stuff like that, and then we hear over the radio
McClane.
Then we hear McClane over the radio say, "Oh God!" And immediately, both Al and the young cop next to him, played by Anthony Peck, who I mentioned this earlier, is in Die Hard 3 as a different character. You know, he said, so Al takes the radio and goes, Roy, you all right? He goes, just trying to fire down a thousand-year-old Twinkie. Now, once again, the idea of communicating between the idea of having Al and John communicate via this radio, I understand that that's the only way that they can communicate, but why does John need to push the radio button when he's eating a thousand-year-old Twinkie. You're like, what does he gain from that? Is he trying to gain sympathy from somebody, even from Hans? I mean, he knows Hans can hear everything. This is a party line. So, like, what's the point besides that they needed in the script in order to start this conversation between the two of them?
Well, exactly. You've nailed it on the head there. It's just it's just a segue. And was it just me? Or it really sounded like McClane was, you know, having sort of a sex, or it was a bit of an it was too orgasmic, I think, for McClane to really care about food. He doesn't strike me as that sort of a person.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's overcompensating here. The way that he says it sounds like he's looking for sympathy. And whether he is or isn't, we don't know. We'll never know. But it sounds as if he's asking for sympathy. But it is a great way to get the two of them to start talking. I love the fact that Al's response, you can hear that there's genuine concern in his voice.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, he mentions the fact that he's trying to fire down a thousand-year-old Twinkie. And then he actually spits. Like, we can hear him spit.
Ugh. So not as bad as Alice's, sound. Right. Yuck.
That's true, but like I'm trying to think, what is he spitting out? You know, because he's still eating the Twinkie. Is he spitting out like part of the wrapper or something like that? You know, that he used the wrapper. You know, use his teeth to open the wrap to rip open the wrapper or something like that.
Good point. Has he managed to somehow slurp down the whatever that white gooey feeling is and spit out the yellow?
Who knows? Sponge? Or vice versa. Could be either. Could be either of those. And we see that there's next to him, there's like an open cooler. Which basically says that, okay, one of the workers left it in this cooler. You know, that's where the Twinkie came from. You know,
why
have the
refrigerate?
It doesn't need to be refrigerated. But if it's closed, then it really is yuck. You know, because when you close one of those coolers and there's nothing keeping it cold on the inside, it gets very, very warm in those things. You know, because there's no air. So you generally don't want to eat something that's been sitting in a warm cooler for a few weeks or however long it is. It could just be a day. You know, this is Christmas Eve. The workers theoretically were working yesterday or the day before. Or even today.
You know, and this is presumably the foreman's desk or something? Or the?
It could be because there are plans on it. So it could be. And then John asked the biggest question that one can ask at this point of time when, you know, you have a little bit of downtime when you're fighting terrorists. What do they put in these things anyway?
I bet you have the answer.
Oh, yes, I do. Yes, I do. Now, I want to preface this by saying something else. Now, I mentioned this before. I don't remember if I mentioned it in this season or if I mentioned it last season, but I was actually at a taping of one of the first episodes of Family Matters in the summer of 1989.
Wow.
And I was very close to, I mean, we were in the audience, but we were, you know, I was there with a whole bunch of friends. We were on like a trip and they took us to a filming of this new show that they were able to get tickets for. I think it were like 40 of us or something like that, you know. So it was easy to get tickets at this point. It was probably the third or fourth episode of the show. And, you know, this was less than a year or around a year after after Die Hard came out. Wow. So, you know, me and my friends, when we saw Reginald Val Johnson, we screamed out to him. We said, "Hey, what's in that Twinkie?" And he started cracking up. And like one of his co-stars that was next to him at the, you know, standing next to him, Thelma Hopkins, who was on the show also. And she started screaming. She started laughing and pumping her fist. You know, and trying to get him to actually say the line. I don't remember. It's been 30, was it 32 years since that happened? 33 years. I don't remember if he responded besides laughing. But, you know, I always found it to be a great story to tell. You know, but how close I was to him, and you know, we got his reaction to asking about, you know, the you know, his Twinkie line, because this was probably his biggest hit besides Family Matters. There's probably not anything else that he did, you know, that one could say is better.
Well,
And
I mean, he's one up on Steve Urkel, isn't he? Did Urkel make any? Sorry, I forget
I
his real
don't
name.
think
Did
so.
Steve Urkel? No, he didn't end up anything.
Jaleel, what was his name? Jaleel White. That was Urkel.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a very good question. I don't remember that. Right now, I'm trying to remember which episode it was.
Number three, you said?
No, it could be the third episode. I don't remember. I actually, it might even be the second episode now that I think about it, because I'm looking at the, you know, on IMDb about what happened on the episode. And it looks like that might actually be the one, because they were talking about the being a two-income family and stuff like that. Unfortunately, on IMDb, they don't say when shows were filmed. You know, that might have helped a little bit for me to remember, you know, when it was. But yeah, I don't know. If it is this one, it was the second episode, which was known to Income Family. So I'm not sure which episode it was. I think it was the second episode, but it doesn't really matter which episode it was. It was one of the very first episodes. How's that? Right. So immediately, Al answers and goes, sugar enriched flour, partially hydrogenated vegetable oil, polysorbate 60, and yellow dye number 5. Just everything a growing boy needs. So there was an episode a few months ago, which was, I believe, episode 46, where we talked very much in depth about Twinkies. So we're not going to really go into to what a Twinkie is, but
Thank
now we
God.
actually get to talk about the ingredients. So do you know what
Oh.
sugar-enriched flour is?
No, not really. Tell me.
So enriched flour is flour with specific nutrients returned to it that have been lost while it was being prepared. Okay, these nutrients include iron and vitamin B, which include folic acid, riboflavin, niacinamide. Sometimes calcium might be added to it. And the problem is that many countries, there are now 79 countries that have that
Outlawed
make it
it?
mandatory to actually do this.
No. Interesting.
Yeah, I would actually think it was the opposite. You know, that you would want, because I would think it would be the opposite. You'd want to take the, you know, that you'd say, okay, well, if naturally it's gone after you have made it into flour, you know, why put it back? But I don't know. I don't know enough about that. So when do you think, I mean, people have been using flour for centuries, right? If not millenniums, right? When do you think people finally realized that these nutrients were missing? Any clue?
The Neolithic age? No idea.
Okay, so the answer to that question is that in the 1920s, so it's been about 100 years since
Wow, that's
they
old.
figured that out. A man named Benjamin R. Jacobs realized that these essential nutrients were missing. And when they would make cereal and other type of grains, they would see that they've lost these nutrients and need to find a way to put them back. Because these are nutrients that are seen as promoting good health and can prevent certain diseases and stuff like that. So in the 1940s, they began to actually be worried about the health of the population in England and the US during the war years, where food was being rationed. And some of these nutrients were very scarce. So, you know, you couldn't get them at other places. So they decided to start enriching the flour in the US. They started in 1942. Yeah. And, you know, it's very interesting that the idea here that they would, you know, do these type of things. And, you know, most food nowadays, you know, you have enriched flour in bread, cake, cookies, brownies, pretzels, donuts, pie crusts, crackers, pasta, breaded chicken, pizza, things like that. There are people who are against it and think that you know, you don't need it and that you should just use regular flours. So it's just pretty interesting that there's this, I guess, pseudo argument about whether people should be using enriched flour or not. So then the second thing that he mentioned is partially hydrogenated vegetable oil, okay, which is known as PHO. Okay, have you ever heard of that before, besides in this movie?
No. Of course, I've heard of pho, the Vietnamese soup dish, but no, not that PHO.
No, probably not. I think we're referring to a different PHO here. Yes. So it's vegetable oil in a solid form at room temperature. Okay, in order to make this type of vegetable oil, it's placed in the presence of hydrogen and a catalyst, and then the bondings are dismantled, and it forms a solid fat, which increases the melting point of the ingredient. Okay, and what that does is it results in an incomplete hydrogenation, which partially converts the oil to trans isomers, which is known as trans fat.
Ah, I know that.
Right. Oh. So this was actually, I guess, invented or discovered in the 1890s by the Nobel laureate Paul Sabatier, because he noticed that this chemical process of hydrogenation of vapors. In 1901, a man named Wilhelm Norman was able to prove that liquid oils could also be hydrogenated. And in 1909, Procter & Gamble acquired the U.S. rights to the patent by Norman, and they were starting to sell the first hydrogenated shortening under the name Crisco.
I know that from American movies, but
What, Crisco or PHO?
Crisco. Is that used in a lot of Southern foods, particularly in like
Louisiana? I believe so, yeah. Yeah, when you're making grits, right?
Yeah. Like that movie, The Help.
Yes.
Yeah.
And also in My Cousin Vinny.
Yes, very good. Yep.
Right. So obviously the FDA is against this, and they've been trying for years to stop it. What the FDA decided to do is that for oils that are partially hydrogenated, which are the primary dietary source of industrially produced trans fatty acids or trans fat, they don't see them as safe. Mm. So they have been trying to stop them for many years, and not as successful as they want to be. How's that?
Look, it's giving John McClane the sustenance and the energy he needs at the right moment. So lay off it, man. Give Twinkies a break here.
That's true. Okay, now what do you know about polysorbates? Polysorbates.
I know poly is a Greek word meaning many, but I don't know anything else.
Okay, so it's a food additive that comes from the reaction of sorbitan fatty acid with ethylene oxide. Okay, they have a whole bunch of different numbers. There is polysorbate 20, 60, 65, 80, right? The 60 and 80 are the most commonly used in food production, and they are mostly used in baked goods and frozen desserts. And what they are used for is they extend the shelf life, they improve the crumb color and strength, and they also increase volume of the, you know, when you're making it. Which now it makes sense as to why they're doing it. So there you go, polysorbate 60. Now, the FDA also has issues with the polysorbates, right? You know, they have restriction levels, and there are even countries that are not that don't approve people using the polysorbates. Okay, the acid number of using 60 or 80 has to be anywhere between 0 and 2. which I don't know enough about chemistry to tell you what that means. Hopefully there are people out there who understand chemistry and have an idea. But basically, that it has to fit in within the restrictions of the FDA in order for them to make them. And it's related to flour weight and things like that. And then we get the final ingredient, yellow dye number 5, which has a real name. It's known as tartrazine. It's a synthetic lemon yellow dye, primarily used in food coloring. It can also be known as E102, yellow 5, yellow 5 lake, acid yellow 23, food yellow 4, trisodium. Okay, it's the most commonly used color all over the world, usually mostly for yellow, obviously. And if you mix it in with a blue dye, you can get various green shades, which they also use a lot in various food products.
And on St. Patrick's Day in the beer, I guess.
yeah, could be.
You haven't mentioned that yellow dye number 5 is most famous as the follow-up to Lou Bega's song Mambo Number 5. Bit of trivia for you. Boom, boom.
There you go. So in desserts, it's used in ice cream and ice pops, popsicles, confectionery and hard candy, which includes gummy bears and marshmallow treats, cotton candy, pudding, gelatin, including Jell-O, cake mixes, pastries, custard powder, marzipan, yes, biscuits, cookies, and in drinks, it's used in Mountain Dew, a whole bunch of different energy and sports drinks, Kool-Aid. It's used in foods like corn chips, you know, like Doritos and nachos. Yeah. It's used in chewing gum, popcorn, potato chips. It's used in jam, jelly, marmalade, mustard, horseradish, pickles, tartar sauce, and other types of food that use it, cornflakes, you know, like cereals, instant soups. There are like rices, risotto, and things like that. They use it. Noodles have it. What else? Fruit and pickled peppers. And
Rob, what country has yellow dye 5, and do we need to invade them? That's a lot of products we need.
Yeah,
are we going to run out of it?
Apparently not, because it's synthetic.
Yeah. Endless.
Yeah, and they also have personal care and cosmetic products that use tartrazine. And I mean, you have different types of soaps use it, and green hand sanitizer, moisturizers, lotions, mouthwashes, perfumes, toothpaste, shampoos, conditioners, eyeshadow, blush, face powder, foundation, lipstick, even lipstick that is pink or purple uses it. Wow. Nail polish remover, temporary tattoos, tanning lotions. I mean, there's unbelievable. The list. There's medications that use it. Cleaning products, paper plates, pet foods, crayons, ink, stamp dyes, face paints.
Ink.
Yeah. Envelope glue, deodorants. That's just unbelievable.
Yeah, bugger stealing government bonds. I think Hans should be after some food dye 5.
Definitely. Yeah, that's just it's just crazy.
Yeah, synthetic food additives are maybe mightier than the sword and the pen and the gun. Wow. Yeah. Thanks for that exhaustive list.
Yeah, seriously. And in the U.S., it's actually required that if a product has tartrazine in it, it must be listed. You know, they don't say that you can't use it, but it has to be listed on the label. So I find that a little funny that that's the requirement.
My favorite American confectionery is the Payday bar. So I'll, next time I open an imported one up, I'll make sure to look at the wrapper and see if it appears there too.
Yeah, seriously. Hmm. And then the conversation between John and Al continues with Al saying, just everything a growing boy needs. And then John says to him, how many kids you got, Al? You know, it's like, it sounds as if he's trying to change the conversation, but is really continuing the conversation.
Hmm.
And he goes, well, as a matter of fact, my wife was working on our first. How about you, cowboy? Wow. And he goes, you got any kids back on your ranch? Yeah, two. I sure hope I can see him swinging on a jungle gym with Al Jr. someday. Well, now that's a date. But you're going to have to bring the ice cream. So first of all, it's funny that Al says that, you know, all of these things are everything a growing boy needs. You know, we just went through the list of all of those things. Those are mostly not things you want to eat. They might taste good, but it sounds like they're more detrimental than helpful.
Yeah. And he doesn't have a kid yet. He says he's preparing for his first. He doesn't know.
Well, I like the fact that he says his wife is working on his first.
Right.
You know, does that is he implying that someone else is helping her out and not him? Yeah.
I suppose back in the 80s, you didn't have that. Everyone says we, you know, we are expecting my we are.
Right.
That probably, yeah. Does he look a bit too old to have his first child?
Well, first yes child and no. But... I mean, it's, you know, you can't really say that a man, you know, there are many men in their 70s, 80s, and 90s that have kids for the first time. I mean, that's not the issue. I mean, in the original novel, the character is a much younger character. Okay, how old do you think Reginald Bell Johnson was when this movie came out in 1988?
I'm terrible at this stuff. I'm so terrible. But I'd say, is he 42 or 3 or something?
He was 36.
Oh, okay.
So he's 36 when it came out, which means he was 35 when it was filmed. Okay, is he, you know, maybe he was focusing on his career and it took him a while till he finally met his wife? I mean, there are a lot of explanations that we can try and use here as to why... You know, he's only having his first child at the age of 36, but who knows?
He's awesome, both the actor and the character.
Yeah, so, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Take back what I said, but yeah.
No, you don't need to. I mean, I love how he continues with the cowboy theme the whole time.
Yeah, that's Rob. That's what I learned about this movie. I finally looked up Yippee-ki-yay, Mother Beep. I had no idea that was from a TV show, right?
Well, it was Yippee-ki-yay was a Roy Rogers phrase. Yeah, we discussed that a few weeks ago.
Ah, a cowboy TV show. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how readily available that was in the rest of the non-American world, but yeah. So, it sort of made sense, I guess. It sounded something. Anyway, the cowboy theme comes back a few times in the movie. Any kids back on the ranch? Yippee-ki-yay, Mother Beep.
And, yeah. Exactly. He goes, how about you, cowboy? Like, he refers to him as a cowboy.
Yeah.
You know, and what's really funny is that at the point when Al asks John if he has any kids, we see John's face and he still looks concerned about giving away anything, any hints to his real identity.
You know, really?
Because he knows that Hans could be listening.
It's a party line.
That's right. I mean, if you look at his face, you can see that he's hesitating to answer.
Yeah. I thought that was more just his melancholy about how his marriage and fatherhood was going for him. I didn't think about that, yeah.
Yeah.
He conveys melancholy really well. He's actually a really fine actor, and you can see that in both these down moments and in the action and when he's really animated. But, yeah, he conveys really well. That's why I said I thought it was more about him being sad about how his marriage, the status of it, rather than him worrying about Hans. But yeah, I take your point because he just acts so well.
Yeah. Yeah. And at this point, you see that he has taken out his wallet and he's looking at his picture of his kids. Yeah. So he is thinking about them at this point.
Yeah. His kid's got a bowl cut. I like that he's he's sort of doing a bit of Dirty Harry there because he's got the tweed jacket with the woolen blue underneath the cardigan, they call the pullover. I don't know what you call them in America, which, as you know, Harry, Dirty Harry, has the red one. And so a bit Harry-esque for me.
Yeah.
Okay. And his son's got a bowl cut. Anyway, go on.
So he mentions that you know, he wants them swinging on the jungle gym with Al Jr. So do you know what a jungle gym is?
Not really. It's just a swing set or something you find at a playground.
Well, it's not a swing set. It's a climbing, you know, it's sometimes like a monkey bars or it's a climbing.
Oh, frame. Yeah, yeah. Yep, right. Yep. Monkey bars, got it. Yep.
It usually has either metal pipes or ropes so that, you know, kids can climb, hang, sit, slide. Sometimes monkey bars can be part of a jungle gym, you know, where you can hang in the air and swing from bar to bar and something like that. And I found in Australian English, the term monkey bars is sometimes used to refer to the entire jungle gym.
Yeah, well, that explains my ignorance too. Yeah, monkey bars is, yeah, exactly. I concur.
Exactly. Okay. All right. Good. I'm glad I got the Australian concurrence on that. So when do you think the first jungle gym or monkey bar, as you call it, was invented?
I'm inclined to think, was it actually developed for inside use at a gym? Maybe into war years, the 20s or something?
First of all, you were correct about the time, but the reasoning, no.
Okay. Damn.
Right. No, but you got it. It was invented in 1920 and patented by a man named Sebastian Hinton in Chicago. Right. And they trademarked it called Jungle Gym, one word. Right. And then there's actually the second prototype that he created is still standing in the Crow Island School in Winnetka, Illinois. In the 30s, the term monkey bars is found in numerous parts of literature. And it refers to the monkey instinct in you know, the benefits of climbing as exercise for children. Hmm. You know, it refers to the monkeys of shaking the bars of a cage, children swinging on a monkey runway, and the game of monkey tag. So when Sebastian Hinton was actually younger, his father had created a similar structure with bamboo that he eventually, you know, patented to use this. So I guess he needs to give his father a lot more of the credit for creating this this idea of a jungle gym.
Fun fact, in Australia, the word tag is more commonly called tiggy. For some reason, tiki. Yeah.
Interesting.
Fun fact.
All right, great. And in order to reduce the risk of injury from falls, so jungle gyms usually have a thick layer of something underneath, whether it's wood chips or impact-absorbing material around covering the ground.
Very sensible.
You know, it needs to have at least 12 inches or 30 centimeters of the material. But as of 2011... you were no longer allowed to use wood chips. That's just not as safe as you know, what we all had as kids. So.
Yeah, they use that sort of foam stuff, that hard, hard foam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't particularly like that. But, you know, if it keeps our kids safe, I don't know what to do about that one.
Yeah. Well, at least trees are saved anyway.
Right. Them. Now, I don't get the ice cream joke at the end. Do you get the joke?
Remind me what it is again.
He says, well, that's a date, but you're going to have to bring the ice cream.
Yeah.
I mean, is he just implying that you got to be there?
I guess so.
Because it's a very strange...
Strip later on.
It's a very strange comment.
Is it a trunk? Yeah. Was it in the script? Maybe we can talk about that later. Maybe it's
we're about to talk about the script. If you have nothing else to talk about in this minute, we can go right to the script. Whatever you want.
All right. I had two things to say. I like how McLean's thumb is really cut to, you know, really cut. What do you call it? Closely cut.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm manicured. Very, very. very closely.
Yeah. That's sort of the equivalent of like drawing your fingernails down a chalkboard. When I see that sort of stuff, I go, ugh. I don't know why. That's just my peccadillo.
Okay.
And two, I like how in the minute you see a bit of McLean's, Bruce Willis's neck hair, just a little. When he's, it's about second 56, bit of fuzz. I'm like, you wouldn't see that on a modern action hero in an action movie. You wouldn't see that on Hemsworth or anything.
So that meaning nowadays they would be waxing them.
Exactly, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's fair.
And that's about all I had.
Okay. All right, so the script, again, there are a few little discrepancies. Nothing major, but still there's some nice stuff. So it starts off with, it says that Powell is standing by the radio, and he suddenly reacts to a groan from McLean. And then he goes, Roy, you all right? And then we see McLean, and he goes, and it says, McLean is standing by an open desk drawer, having just ripped open a package of Twinkies he's found. He grimaces, mouth full. So, I mean, first of all, according to the script, he just takes it out of someone's desk, as opposed to it being from a workman's lunchbox or something like that. Hmm. And McLean's response is, he says, just trying to handle some year-old Twinkies. Yuck. It works much better in the movie. He still does ask for the ingredients, and Powell gives it to him. And then McLean laughs and says, you sound like a man with a couple of kids. And then Powell goes, not yet. The wife is working on our first. And then it mentions that as McLean swallows a Twinkie with a grimace, he takes out his wallet, flips it open to a picture of himself and Holly and the kids in happier days. And then the final line where Powell talks about ice cream, he says, it's a date. You buy the ice cream as opposed to you bring the ice cream. But again, I don't think any of these differences really need to, they don't impact anything. You know, it's fine the way they did in the movie, and I think it works well that way.
I agree.
Every Tuesday, we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track Holiday Edition, where my guest will give a little story or anecdote or something about some sort of adventure that they had at some point of their lives related to some sort of holiday. So, John, you got a story for us?
Yeah. As I explained off mic, I don't really have any great stories narrative-wise that I've given to you before, but one holiday I remember at Christmas time, obviously I'm from the Southern Hemisphere where it doesn't really snow that much unless you're in the Andes or something, and I was in Berlin and London in 2009, and I was staying Clapton Common, and it was snowing, which apparently doesn't happen that often in London for more than, you know, a day or two. So, yeah, I'm seeing snow really for the first time in the wild was quite an amazing holiday experience for me.
Oh, wow. Okay. That sounds fun.
Pretty boring and mundane for you guys in the Northern Hemisphere. But
no such thing.
Pretty cool.
No such thing.
So, yeah.
All right, great. Do you want to once again tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Please go to DirtyHarryMinute.com or on Facebook, iTunes. You can find Dirty Harry Minute. Please download and enjoy.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me directly on my website, MovieAroundMinute.com. So, John, you feel like feeling lucky? You want to come back in tomorrow?
Yes, punk. Yeah. I feel lucky.
No, it's please. Muck, not punk. Yeah, there you go. Feeling lucky. Schmuck. All right, so until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.